time to tell the neighbors the Charlie Evers Show is on. It's time that you can listen to eras long bygone. So email all your loved ones or call them on your phone and tell them Charlie Evers is on. It may be terminal wrinkles, it may be Hillary's hair, it may be on top of the courthouse, you bet old Charlie's there. You may be invited to dinner, but tell them you can't come. The Charlie Evers is on.
Okay, and a big good morning to all of you. Welcome to another beautiful day. Wow, isn't it nice out there? And you've got to enjoy it because naturally it's going to get colder here in a short period of time. So enjoy the fall atmosphere and everything else. Wow, it's great. I could just sit outside in a chair and just soak it all in. Wow, great. Well, I would like to, first of all, I would like to thank Hemmerly's Flowers and Gifts out on East Center Street. They sent me birthday balloons. Oh, boy. So that was my first thing at denoting my birthday, which is tomorrow. I'll be 85. 85? I thought that was for older people. Yeah, I'll be 85, my land. I was 17 years old when I started in Marion. 17 years old in 1952. Boy, there's been a lot of water under the bridge and over the dam and here and there and everywhere. Floods, snowstorms, you name it. Heat. Okay, now next Friday, let me see here. I'm trying to put these names down. Next Friday will be World War II in the Pacific. Don Wilson and, let's see, my mind doesn't think fast enough for my tongue. Don Wilson, I'm trying to think of his last name. Same as the chiropractor. Denton. Okay, I got Cecil Denton. Oh, my land. And, of course, my good friend from out in northern Marion County, we have, let me see here. Boy, I tell you, this morning my mind is having a hard time getting in gear. Isn't that weird? Wow. What? Maybe it's not weird. Maybe it's a habit. Oh, here's a caller. Yes, caller, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to coach you along there a little bit.
That's Cecil, good. Don Wilson, Cecil Denton, and...
Kensel Clutter.
Kensel Clutter, yes.
These gentlemen were kind enough to join us last Friday at the VIP reception with Dr. Harold Brown, one of the 11 remaining Tuskegee Airmen. And I'm sure they've got some stories, and people, this is an opportunity to call in, learn history firsthand from these individuals who were there. And it should be an exciting show next Friday.
Well, I hope so, because that was a long time ago, and there's not many left that can talk about it.
Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is, Cecil told me he was in Nagasaki and Hiroshima after the bomb.
Wow, okay.
I don't know exactly how quickly afterward, but that's something that you can tune in, ask questions in that. And then, of course, Kensel Clutter. Now, you know more about him than I do. He was a pilot or a co-pilot in a B-25 bomber.
Yeah, I can't remember the type of bomber, but I know that he found a captured Japanese film showing him being shot out of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, he suffered after that. Many injuries.
Mm-hmm. And Don Wilson was a radio man tail gunner in a PBM, a torpedo bomber, the same kind of plane that Paul Newman was a radio operator in, and the kind of plane that George Bush Sr. Was a pilot.
Oh, was that a PBM at the airport?
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah. It's stationed up at Liberty Air Museum in Port Clinton, yeah.
Right. So that'll be something to look forward to, and it should make for quite an interesting show.
Yeah, I'm right. A week from today.
That's right, 1 week from today. And hey, happy birthday.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm just kind of curious. A lot of people don't realize it, but how do you feel about your 85th revolution around or orbit around the sun?
Well, I think my revolutions are slowing down, and I doubt if I'll make it for another revolution, really. But in the meantime, and between times.
Remember, it's an orbit. We shouldn't confuse things with revolutions like wars and that.
Yes.
It's an orbit around the sun.
Yes.
So.
Very good. Boy, it gets hot at times going around the sun.
Hey, you get a good tan.
Yeah. Very good.
So, okay.
All right.
Have a good show.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. Yes, indeed. Yeah, next Friday is going to be nice. Okay. Let me get my controls situated here just a second. So I can reach the telephone. All right, there we go. Now, there's, of course, Scott had a very interesting program talking about things of my era, really, in Marion. I came here, you know, in 52, and a lot of things that took place in that era, those people are gone. You know, that was a long time ago. You know, how long was that? 52, 60... 67 years ago? Is that right? Yeah, 67. A lot of people have come and gone since then. My, well, isn't that something? Now, back in that era, when I came here, there were two ladies, and a lot of you remember these if you're old enough, two ladies that walked around Marion. And in the wintertime, they had their legs covered with newspapers to keep warm. And they would go to different grocery stores and given their leftover vegetables and things like that to eat. And so they lived a very meager existence, you might say. But I was so curious. I'm always curious, of course, about everything. And when I was an engineer at the radio station, maybe I wasn't, I might have been on the air at the time, but they always hitchhiked to Bucyrus, and why, I don't really know, but I would pick them up and take them there, and mainly because I wanted to talk to them and find out their background. And those two ladies were very interesting. One was absolutely serious. She had been a school teacher, and the other was kind of lighthearted, and I don't know if what kind of work she did in her productive years. But anyhow, these two ladies, and I can't remember where they lived in Marion, but there have been all kinds of stories about where they lived and how when they moved out they found money in the walls, and that's not true at all. You know, we tend to make up stories when things get dull. Isn't that the truth? Oh, my goodness. But, wherever they lived has been torn down a long time ago, and the ladies are gone. I have pictures of them, though. I have two nice 8x10 pictures of these ladies. Now, what I'm getting at, the one that, both of them had, you know, their father was a good friend of James Whitcomb Riley. Yes, that's right. Their father, I don't know if he lived in Marion, or I would think so. But yes, it was a good friend, and they had correspondence between James Whitcomb Riley and their dad. Oh boy, would that have been something to have. But that's all gone. But the thing is, in the Mohawk paper, the Mohawk Historical Society, their quarterly paper or newsletter has 4 poems by James Whitcomb Riley. Now, he was a poet that was bent toward entertaining children and talking about children. And Little Orphan Annie is his, or it originated with James Whitcomb Riley, Little Orphan Annie. And because of his poems. Now, let me read. Now, it's kind of hard to read because it's in a different form of of talk. Little Orphan Annie's come to our house to stay and wash the cups and saucers up and brush the crumbs away and shoo the chickens off the porch and dust the hearth and sweep and make the fire and bake the bread and earn her board and keep. And all of us other children, when the supper thing's done, we set around the kitchen fire and has the mostest fun a-listening to the witch tales that Annie tells about and the goblins that gets you if you don't watch out. Little Orphan Annie. Now, James Whitcomb Riley was the author, the one that brought up Little Orphan Annie, who later on was in comic strips, remember? And one other poem. Onced they was a little boy wouldn't say his prayers. So when he went to bed at night away upstairs, his mammy heard him holler and his daddy heard him bawl. And when they turned the kivers down, he wasn't there at all. And they seeked him in the raffer room and cubbyhole and press and seeked him up the chimney flue and everywheres, I guess. But all they ever found was his pants and roundabout, and the goblins will get you effing you don't watch out. Well, it goes on. There's a couple more of the poems about Little Orphan Annie, but I thought the Marion connection there. The fact that the Reichert sisters' dad was a friend of James Whitcomb Riley and corresponded with him, and James Whitcomb Riley was the originator of Little Orphan Annie. So that's that story. Okay, so what else do we have today? I have, yesterday I talked about some of the interesting things that happened 100 years ago. And when you read about things 100 years ago, you say, well, things are not so bad today after all, because we've been, you know, in trying times so often over hundreds, if not thousands of years. However, since we weren't living over 100 years ago, most of us, we don't realize what happened at that time. Now, if you were living in Findlay, Ohio, in 1913, that was a disaster for Findlay. I got the complete story here about what happened in Findlay, and you wouldn't believe the deaths that, you know, we hear about all these deaths from hurricanes and everything, but you don't realize that we had many, many deaths as a result of storms here in Ohio, especially in Findlay, Ohio, in 1913. And I could give you an example here. During the 3 days of flooding, 500 people were made homeless. The bodies of those drowned were found 5 or 6 miles down the river. And on one day, 9 of the flood victims were buried from St. Joseph's Church. 6 hearses pulled up before the church and 9 caskets were carried up the main aisle, a mother with 8 of her children. The sight of this sad funeral home added to the grief of the stricken community. A beautiful monument of white Carrara marble imported from Italy marks the resting place of 14 of Tiffin's flood victims, all buried together in St. Joseph's Cemetery. Now, that was 1913. That flood also hit Marion, although we have no river in Marion, but we do have a lot of streets that flooded. We had other floods. Just a second here. I've got a caller. Yes, caller, go ahead.
Good morning, Taylor.
Yes.
Yeah, hey, a couple minutes ago, you were talking about those two women that lived on the north end of town?
Yes.
Okay, we lived on North Grand Avenue, right before you curved into Kentucky Avenue. There was a cut alley.
Yes.
It's like a short alley.
Right.
That went off of that curve. They lived up back there in an old rickety house for years before they died.
Uh-huh.
And yes, there was rumors that they had all kinds of money in the walls and under their bed because they slept on floors and just enclosed whatever they could sleep on. We were in there a few times, my dad and I went in to help them out a couple times.
Okay.
And they lived up there on North Grand Avenue in Kentucky, the cut alley.
Okay, I was thinking that was where they lived. And I talked to somebody that tore that house down and said there was no money in there. It was all just rumors. So, okay. Well, that's good that you could pass that information along.
Right, yeah, you kind of cut out there for a minute. I didn't want to hear you.
Oh.
Okay, anyway, that's all on them too, or part of it.
Yeah.
And they did go around and Quizzies and all the stores and then lunch counters. They did give them stuff off there that said it's on their way.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, okay. When I took them to Bucyrus in my car, they always had a basket full of old fruit from the grocery stores. And
yeah.
They offered me a nickel for hauling them to Bucyrus.
They did.
Yep, a long time ago. Okay, yeah. Bob.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right, yeah, the Reichert sisters. Yeah, you know, that's a part of Marion history. A part that you have to have a few years on you to remember. I would like... the man who took the pictures of them was the late Tom Yanitel, and he sent the pictures to me, and it's quite interesting because they weren't posing for these pictures. They were walking along as they usually did, and I think it would enjoy seeing something out of the past like that brought about so many stories over the years of, did you know those two ladies? Yep. Is there anyone like that today? Probably not. They would have applied for assistance from some government organization and wouldn't have had to go.
Little Scott, when President Trump announced he was running for president, I called him an egotistical jerk.
Yes, I do remember that. Has your mind changed?
Well, no.
No?
See, you thought I meant that in a negative way. Rookie mistake.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Okay, back once again. Whoops.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT. GOAT. Acronym. Stands for greatest of all time, as in spaghetti sandwiches for dinner. They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, and it is a Getaway Friday, September the 30th. Now, what's interesting is that this is a very noteworthy day, Charlie. Do you know why this is a noteworthy day?
Yeah, it's Friday.
Friday, but do you know what tomorrow is?
Saturday.
Saturday is the 85th birthday
of
Charlie Evers.
Yes.
And you know what? We've got some people here
Oh, really?
Who are going to join this show right now
No kidding.
And celebrate this birthday.
Wow.
Do the people out there in the office want to come on in and see what's going on here to celebrate the birthday? Oh, here we go. Well, there's somebody who looks awful familiar.
Jeff Ruth
is here.
Yeah.
And behind Jeff, we have Mary Ellen Withrow.
Mary Ellen. Wow.
Is here.
Hey, good to see you.
Yes. And away, and Glenn Coble is here, who hosts Progressive Life on the station.
And I can see myself on the, you got the camera on.
We're going to record this for posterity,
really?
Charlie. This, because for the next 2.5 hours, it's going to be a celebration of the career and 85
really?
Years of Marion's probably most well-known broadcaster, Charlie Evers.
I got to stay here 2.5 hours?
2.5 hours, oh, Jeff. You're here for the long haul today. And Charlie, we have got surprises planned over
really?
The next 2.5 hours. Oh, my goodness. I hope you didn't have anything planned big for the show today.
No, I didn't.
I think you know the lady who just walked in, too.
Oh, my wife.
Your wife is here.
I didn't notice.
Yes. So we've got people coming in the studio throughout the day. We've got phone calls coming in next 2.5 hours. We're going to have a lot of fun here.
No kidding.
Oh, there's a cake out there. Wait till you see the cake.
Really?
Balloons from Himmerly's. We need to thank Himmerly's. Go ahead.
Mary Ellen, you've gone through this 85.
I have.
Plus.
Are you trying to implement my age over the air?
No.
You know,
I gotta tell you, Mary Ellen looks a lot better than you do.
Yeah, right. Now,
thank you.
She survived.
You know, Mary Ellen, when they dedicated the schools to you, it was interesting because first thing I noticed was they put your age in that article.
Yes, always.
They always have to put your age in
right.
there.
And then a couple of people after that said, "Are you still driving?"
So, Mary Ellen, when you hit the age that Charlie is hitting today, what are the 80s like?
Well, the first part's pretty good, and then it gets a little worse as it goes on.
As time goes on.
It gives Charlie a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, right.
In the 80th decade.
What?
Now, when you first started here, Charlie, you were 79, and I remember you telling me that you had to live to be 80 because nobody in your family ever had.
That's right. My sister wanted to be lived to be 80, and she didn't quite make it.
Didn't quite, but she was close.
Yeah.
Now you've hit 80 and then some now.
Yeah.
And still a long way to go.
Yeah. And it might be noted, too, that where we're broadcasting from is above the Heart Failure Clinic, which I become a member.
Well, that's a good plug for the Heart Failure Clinic
right.
downstairs. Sure. Now, tell us the story. We have a little bit of time here before our first surprise, but how did you get it? Because there's a story here. You started at the radio station, but we're not on the air for a long time. Tell that story.
Well, back in 1949, I was a freshman in high school, and the radio station, I was a ham radio operator, so I was acquainted with a lot of other engineers and the like, especially the ones at MRN. And I told them, I said, now when I graduate, I would sure like to get a job down there. But in the meantime, 1949, they needed somebody to dust the chairs off in the tent at the Crawford County Fair, the first fair since World War II. And so they had 95 chairs, including the one I gave you. And I dusted those and dusted every, you know, I helped do some wiring. And that was my first paycheck. From WMRN, 1949.
But the
thing is, yeah. I waited and waited. The 50 cents an hour they were paying me. And I didn't get the check. So I got on my bicycle and rode to the radio station and walked in. I said, I'm so-and-so, and I'm here. I'd like to collect my or get my check. Oh, well, we just mailed that yesterday.
It's in the mail.
Now, did it show up?
Yes, it did.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So but you didn't speak a word on the air for how many years?
At least 13 years.
So what year did you go on?
1968.
Well, 68.
It'd been 14 years.
14. And how did you end up on the air?
Wait a minute. From 49 to 68?
Yes.
That's 19 years.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Well, I didn't want to say anything.
You didn't speak a word for 19 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, and I saved up a lot. Boy, I listened to Madge Cooper. I was her engineer every day for years and years and years. And I can remember playing her theme song sometimes three times because she was late a lot of times.
And that wasn't the most interesting theme song in the world. Three times through.
What's the name of that?
Boccherini's Minuet.
Oh, I thought.
Yeah.
Remember that,
yeah.
Mary Ellen?
I do remember it, yeah. But I'm impressed he knows the name of it.
Yeah, I am too.
Well, that's one of those things that's right up rolling around in
is
my head.
Is that right?
Yeah, the
well,
Boccherini's Minuet.
And one of the car dealers in Columbus was using that as background music for their television commercials. And now that same company is using the, it's almost a disgrace, the Ohio State, what do you call it?
The, Carmen, Ohio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Carmen, Ohio. They sing that off key.
Oh.
I'm surprised the university hasn't put them off the air.
Put the brakes yet.
Yeah.
Well, they're probably paying royalties to use that.
Oh, I'm sure they are, yeah.
As long as the check shows up, They're probably okay.
Well, anyhow, Ken Charles was our program director at later years, and he went on vacation, and he couldn't think of anybody to take his place. Maybe we were short of personnel, I don't know. And he said, ever since you've been on the mornings for so many years, you know the procedure, why don't you just do it for me while I'm gone? I said, okay. And so I did, and I started taking phone calls. I thought, you know, this is boring playing music. And so I started taking phone calls, and one thing led to another. And Ken came back from vacation, and he said, Evers, it's yours. You're on the mornings now. That's it.
Now, what time was this?
That would have been 1968.
60. And what time of the morning were you on?
Oh, I was on early, you know.
Like 5 a.m., wasn't it?
Yeah.
Now, did you ever oversleep?
I overslept quite a few times.
Yeah.
I would rush into from Clarendon into Marion and wouldn't give the transmitters time to warm up. I'd flip on the high-power switch and cross my fingers that the boss wouldn't catch on to what I was doing.
Well, this is interesting. 1968, you first went on the air, and that was the year Mary Ellen was running for school board because you entered the school board in 69, right, Mary Ellen?
Right.
So the same time you guys were coming together here in Marion.
We were active.
You were active, that's right.
On the south side of the radio station was a large billboard. And on that billboard was Mary Ellen with these great big glasses.
Now, I'll tell you, you know what Jeff said one time to me? We had to look at that every day.
So you had big glasses.
Yeah, I had big glasses, and there was various opinions. I thought they were great, but there was a lot of people who didn't care for them.
But you were right there at the radio station.
Yeah, I was watching them as they went in.
And that's what you were doing.
Right.
Now, Mary Ellen, as you were running for office, Elgin School Board, and then treasurer here and living in Marion County, did you listen to Charlie on the air?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Charlie is a legend.
Yeah, legend.
Old-timer.
That's it.
Yeah.
Legend.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, tell people the importance, Mary Ellen, of radio in those days, 60s.
Oh, it was very important. Yeah, we listened to the radio, and there was not much else.
Now, Jeff, you took over for Charlie when he left in 95?
80.
The second time.
Ninety-five. Yeah.
Now, how was that taking over for Charlie after he'd been there for so long?
Well, I think when I was on before, I mentioned. I mean, he knew everybody. He knew everything in Marion. I was working evenings for the most part, and I had done tradio and for a while, but you know, I knew nothing about farming, and I'm thinking I can't do what he did, and I don't know that anybody ever said, you know, do your own thing or whatever, but it was like, you know, he talked to a lot of people, and it was sort of like, you know, that worked. And so when I started mornings, I just, you know, wanted to get people on in the community talking about different events, and, you know, just sort of took off. I never did, you know, much, obviously, with the farm report, because I didn't know anything about farming. I know I did a lot more with the sports because I was more comfortable with the sports than Charlie was.
Now, when you first took over, you told me at one point that people were not happy that he had left.
No.
No. You got some mail, didn't you, at that point?
Nothing really critical of me, per se.
Right.
But it was just, you know, we're never going to listen to the station again. You know, I can't believe Charlie let, you know, that sort of thing.
So, but the thing is, when I came back in 90, they were going to eliminate Tradio and just put me on for an hour through there. And there was a petition.
It was a backlash.
Yeah, oh boy. Listeners didn't like that. And they formed petitions. And brought this out to the radio station, all these names. Yeah, you're not going to eliminate Tradio, that's for sure.
They weren't going to let you do that.
So I never got that extra hour.
Well, and in between the time he left in 80 or 81 and came back, they had a lot of different morning people. I can't remember how many different morning, but nothing really seemed to fit.
There was one morning guy. He worked all night. His name was Bob George. After he left the radio station.
Bob just passed away.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
No kidding?
Looked up on the internet.
Oh.
Because he came here from Cincinnati, I came here from Cincinnati. And Bob and I, a lot of times when we got off work Sunday night, because the station closed, they shut down. We would go to Ross's restaurant, and we'd have, a late dinner or whatever. And I checked, he had moved to Florida. And he passed away. He had a heart attack or a stroke, and it sounded like he died almost immediately.
After he left MRN, wasn't he a dispatcher with the Cincinnati police?
Went to Cincinnati and was a dispatcher for the police. He did some... Oh, he'd call the White House at 3 o'clock in the morning. He'd want to talk to the president.
Yeah.
And he'd put whoever answered the phone, he'd put them on the speakerphone. I mean, he did some really weird things.
Yes. And didn't he say he was gay?
Oh, he said that on the air.
I
don't remember.
Well, in the 70s, that would have been a flap.
But he also played the saw.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those regular carpenter saws. He had a bow for a violin, and I would have him. I relieved him in the mornings after he was there all night. But I'd make him play that saw for me on the air.
I don't think he was gay. I should know. I shouldn't.
You don't think he was gay? No. Now, what's the rest of that? He's gone. He can't hear us anymore.
The dentist that I was going to, Bob was doing the dental assistant.
Oh, jeez.
So, I told you I shouldn't have done it.
God.
So I don't know if he was gay or not.
But Bob was one of the most interesting people you could ever meet.
That's a story I hadn't thought of in a while.
Yeah. Oh, thank God Bob's not around to hear this now.
I didn't know him.
No, didn't know Bob George. No, poor Bob. No. But you thought he said he was gay on
here. And that would have created a little uproar for a while.
Well, maybe he was just trying to create an uproar.
Bob, that was probably just wanted to create a buzz.
I think so. Oh, my.
Now, what was radio like back in those days, Charlie, the 60s, 70s?
Well, I think I changed. It used to be pretty set in concrete. Every 15 minutes, you had a different episode, maybe from ABC Radio Network. And we were pretty, with Bob Mason, he was pretty, held a rod over you.
He had a different... Tell the story about the record you told when Jeff was here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We were not allowed to play any rock and roll. That was one thing. And I don't know if it was a rock and roll record, but it was kind of raunchy. I was playing, and he came in. I was an engineer then. He came in, lifted the arm off the record, picked it up and threw it out the back door and hit my car. I had a 41 Packard, and my grill took the brunt of that record.
Oh, man. He didn't want to hear it anymore.
No.
But you buried a record, too.
I did, yeah. There was a record called Chapel in the Moonlight or something like that. I can't remember the artist. And the kids from Harding High School requested that song every night. And I got so, and I was an engineer then, I got so tired of playing it. That was Club Request, it was called. It used to be Club 1490. Then we changed it to Club Request. And it was all these kids would come off the radio station, too, and stand around watching us.
You know, Charlie, put your headphones on, because I think this is one of our first surprises here.
Oh.
Now, for many years on WMRN, you had morning conversations with the guy we're about to talk to now, and I believe he was one of the early influences of the Peanut Push and possibly the Blizzard of 78, meteorologist Gil Gomez. Gil, are you there?
I certainly am.
Hey, Gil!
How are you, Chuck? Happy birthday.
Well, thanks a lot, Gil. I don't know what the difference in our age is. There's a little difference, though, isn't there?
Well, I am 80 now.
Oh, you're 80?
Yeah, I'll be 81 in January.
Well, no kidding. So we're both of us are right up there.
Yeah, we're heading into the prime time of life, they tell me.
Yes. Well, you know what? Now, of course, we influenced Keith Sider, who is now the executive director of the American Meteorological Association, and he claims listening to us got him interested in weather.
How about that?
Yeah, isn't that something? And he's stationed in Boston. But there is another guy at the, Bob Nunley is his name, and he also claims that he wouldn't be at Channel 4 doing weather if it wasn't for us.
Oh, boy.
So that's a little, I think that's one of the greatest accomplishments when you can influence somebody in a good way.
Yeah, in a very good way. And it makes me proud that, you know, you and I were interesting enough to listen to so
right.
that in doing that, they got a job in meteorology. That's amazing.
Yeah, if you were to go to the internet and type in the American Meteorological Society and scroll down, you would find Keith Sider's name and address there as executive director. He's been that for years now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really something when you think about it. And this morning, Scott was talking about the blizzard. And, of course, that comes up every now and then. And, Gil, if it hadn't been for you, nobody would have known about the coming blizzard.
that's really interesting. It really is.
So but, how's the family?
Well, the family's doing good. Irene and I are now in assisted living.
Really?
Yeah, we are. Our health really deteriorated there, and we both were. For that reason, we both had to move into assisted living where we could have medical care almost instantly, you know, when we needed it. Irene's had a lot of heart problems and has had frequent bouts with congestive heart failure. I had a heart attack about four years ago. But it wasn't overly serious. I just had a couple stents put in. But we're both still running around, you know.
That's interesting, Gil. I also have congestive heart failure.
Oh, boy.
In fact, I'm in a building on the second floor, and below here is a heart clinic that I am at about once a week.
How about that?
But hey, Gil, I got a question for you here. How did you and Charlie become friends? What was it about talking on the radio that made that friendship happen?
I think it was his interest in weather, because my job at that time was to do, I think it was a 3-minute talk about the weather situation for the next 24 hours. And that's it, you know, do say that or talk about that and hang up. And I think one day Charlie just said, before you hang up, let me ask you this. And that started it. He asked the question, and I think we talked for another 10 minutes, and that became a habit after that.
Now, Gil, you supplied a lot of meteorological data to broadcasters. Now, how good a broadcaster would you put Charlie at?
Charlie?
Yeah.
I think he's in the top 10. I would put him up there. He is great. He had such a following. You know, when we used to do that peanut push, we would ask people in surrounding communities if they wanted us to come by and say hello and everything else, you know. And we just had tons of requests of people wanting us to come by. And it was mainly just to see Charlie in person and shake his hand and then ask weather questions.
Now, Charlie, am I wrong here? You and Gil were the forerunners of the peanut push we still have, right?
That's right.
How did that happen?
I've got a lot of pictures of Gil at the peanut push. And, it happened just, I don't know, everything fell together. Nothing was planned. It just happened.
Mm-hmm.
But the peanut push drew the crowds like crazy. It was something entirely different and crazy.
Well, that was you and I, a couple of crazy guys.
That's right. And I pushed you across Marion 4.5 miles in a wheelbarrow. And then one year I pulled you in a bathtub.
In the bathtub?
And another year I pulled you in Snoopy's doghouse. And one you had had a problem with your eyes, and so indicating a medical problem, we had you in a rocking chair, and the meter maid in Marion pushed you down the street.
And I remember once when we were driving to Marion for the peanut push, the highway patrol stopped us and put me in handcuffs, and my kids were in the car, and they didn't know what to do. They were panicky, and it was all set up as a gag.
Yeah, that was my first venture, all expense paid trip to Plankton, Ohio.
Oh boy.
There's so many things, Gil, we could go on for hours.
Oh, we could for hours and hours.
Yeah.
How are you liking the weather situation?
Well,
across
the
U.S.
bad right now. It's a little dry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really turned around to a very dry period up here in the northern half of Ohio.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about the winter coming up?
The winter?
Yeah.
I really think it's not going to be that bad. You know, last winter, it wasn't overly bad at all. And I think that this winter may turn out to be very mild, not a great deal of snow. You know, I would estimate that we may have 3 major snow blasts over this coming winter. But that's going to be it.
Okay.
And it's going to be mild enough so that after those big snowstorms, they'll melt off real quick.
Well, that's good. Now, Gil, if you can tell without too much detail how you predicted the blizzard of 78, what was happening?
Well, it was real interesting because, of course, I had access to a lot of weather data, and I was receiving it before we talked on the air. I was receiving all this data, and I could see that the pressures were falling rapidly. They were falling real rapidly, and I looked over out to the west where the storm was coming from, and those places out there were already reporting rapid drops in visibility due to heavy snow that was occurring, and they were reporting some strong wind gusts. And I said, how can we miss this? There's no way we're going to miss that storm. because the falling pressures indicated to me that it was intensifying as it was moving eastward. And so I said, I have to mention it. And I did, and everything worked out just the way I had
anticipated. It sure didn't. You gave at least 4 days notice of the coming storm. Wow.
Hey, Gil, here we got a couple minutes left here before the top of the hour when we're going to break, but here on the 85th birthday eve of Charlie, I know you have something you'd like to say to him, a little special message about your years with him, which now, boy, what is it, 40? 40 years you've known each other?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. And yes, Charlie, I wish you the very best, and I really hope that for at least a few more years, you're able to continue to just entertain the people that love listening to you. And you're such a conversationalist, and these people just enjoy knowing that tomorrow they're going to turn their radios on and be able to listen to you. And the information that you provide for these people, these listeners, is just it's just something they could never get except right there in Marion. So I wish you the very best for the years we both have left to enjoy life.
Well, thank you so much, Gil. Boy, just hearing your voice, it gives me a real thrill. Looking back over the years, wow.
Can't do a Charlie Evers tribute without Gil Gomez. Thank you, Gil.
Thank you.
Stay well.
Okay.
Gil Gomez, legendary meteorologist on WMR. Now, Jeff, before we go to break here, we're going to come back. We've got more playing Charlie, old man.
Really?
Oh, this is going to be exciting. Jeff, you remember the Gil Gomez, Charlie Evers relationship?
Not really.
But you've heard about it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because I worked evenings when I first started there, right. And I was asleep in bed when Charlie was on in the morning from, 5:30 to 7 or 5 to whatever.
Right.
So yeah, I knew Charlie was big, but I never listened to Charlie in the morning for years.
But those two names for years, even when I was at MRN, you heard about Gil Gomez and Charlie.
Yeah.
I thought Gil Gomez worked there at one point because people mentioned him so often. I didn't realize he just called in from time to time.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go to break here, and we do have some people to thank. We do want to thank Kimberly's Flowers for dropping off the balloons today, and we do want to thank the L&P Cake Shop, because there is a cake out there,
really?
Charlie, that you haven't seen yet.
What?
Mary Ellen here, 40th Treasurer of the United States, she's going to come back with us for another hour today, I think.
Not a complete hour,
but she'll be here for a little longer. Jeff's going to be here for the duration.
But you forgot your glasses.
We're
going
to tie him to the chair. Patty Worcester's here. She's going to be with us today. Glenn Coble's got some things to say, and Jeannie, Charlie's wife, and more people to come and surprises. Don't go anywhere. It's the Charlie Evers celebration today on the eve of the 85th birthday on WWGH Radio. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in 15 minutes and continue. Oh, you don't want to miss anything that's coming up. You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio.